testing. This is D.W. Calvert speaking. This is February the 14th, 1980. I'm on the campus of A&T State University in Greensboro, North Carolina, visiting with a longtime colleague and friend, R.E. Jones, who headed up the extension program for the black extension workers originally, and who was very much a part of the top extension administration when it became merged on, to some extent at least, on a statewide basis. R.E., it's good to be with you again. We've had a lot of interesting experiences together. How about telling us where you were born, where you grew up, and what led you into the field of agriculture, where you went to school and so on?
Well, I was born in Warren County. And I left there after graduating from high school at the Warren County Training School in Wise, which was about 30 miles from where I live.
Now that the Wise, W-I-S-E?
W-I-S-E.
Was that a training school for black students?
A training school for black students.
High school.
In fact, the truth, that was the only high school in Warren County at that time. It later developed that Warrenton had a high school for blacks. I was under the vocational agriculture teacher. His name was John L. Bolden.
And B-O-L-D-E-N. B-O-L-D-E-N.
And at that time, the vocational agriculture was important in this school, and coming off of the farm in Warren County, I got pretty much interested in vocational agriculture.
Did you grew up on a farm? Did your parents own the farm, or?
Yes, it was an 87-acre farm. It was owned by my parents. In fact, all of my career, or all of my life up until the time that I left the county to come to A&T, I lived on the farm in Warren County. It was at, it's about an intersection of about three counties, Vance, Warren, and Franklin. And I was within 3 miles of both county, all three of these county lines where I was born.
What caused you to come to A&T?
Well, when I went to high school, after I left elementary school, coming in contact with the vocational agriculture teacher, I felt like that I was closer to what his emphasis was than any other part of the high school, even though I had to do the rest of the coursework and that kind of thing, which I did. But I was particularly interested in agriculture, and the fact that during the time that I was taking vocational agriculture, we had an opportunity to come to A&T for what they called at that time a state judging contest, which included both crops and livestock. And I participated on that team in my senior year. And at that point, I made the decision that I would come to A&T.
And so you came here in what year?
That was in 1928.
And you graduated?
I graduated in 1932.
You were here 4 years. And then what did you do?
At that point, I went to Washington, North Carolina, and taught science in the high school there, which was Washington High School for Blacks. I taught there for exactly 7 months. And at that time, I was offered a job. It really wasn't offered. I heard that there was some concern about an agricultural agent in Craven County. And I lived with a minister who was pastoring a church over in Craven County. And at that time, I decided I would go with him over to the church and visit with one of the friends that I knew in the high school who had graduated from A&T about a year ago. And he was telling me about this. And so I visited with the people who were interested in this. And it was an interesting thing. I got an extension because this was in 1933. It was the beginning of all these programs with alphabets. And
that was when the NRA
and NRA and AAA.
Yes.
Oh, you just it's an innumerable number of them. But anyway, the welfare department was interested in seeing if they could do something about the people on welfare in terms of growing their own garden and canning and that kind of thing, trying to do something with the diet of these people. And at that point, this the welfare department offered to put up the county source of funds to start this position. And I started on May 1, 1933 with an extension agent appointment primarily to do nothing but garden work in the city of New Bern. And I walked all over the city of Greensboro along with another person at times, especially when we needed to spray the garden for insects and that kind of thing. And in the meantime...
You mean the city of New Bern?
The city of New Bern.
Rather than Greensboro.
And this went on for about, for about 4 months. And in the meantime, this program came in there when it was necessary to plop acreages of cotton and that kind of thing in order to be in compliance and kill pigs in order to stay within the limits of the what they felt was the production needed. And at that time, they asked me primarily in extension to see if I could work with the farmers to get them to do this. And this was the most interesting thing. I went up in the northern end of the county with a fellow that they could not get to kill off the pigs necessary to be within compliance. And so when I went up to see him, he told me, said, I wouldn't destroy life for nothing in the world, no kind of life. I don't hunt, I don't do anything, and I'm not going to do it, and if they don't pay me, it won't make a bit of difference in the world. And boy, they got real disturbed about him, because he's one of the bigger farmers in that section. So, but finally, we told him that we didn't see no other way for him to get by, so he finally decided he would do it. He said he would get down on his knees and pray, and the Lord told him that this was all right, he might do it.
And how long were you in the county agent job then in that county?
I started as agent in Craven County, and of course I was the first black employed at that time in Craven County, and had not had extension work in the county among blacks. And I stayed there from May 1, 1933 until September 16, 1936. And at that time, the state offered me the position of a 4-H club agent. And this was they had had a black state 4-H agent for some reason, this didn't work out. So they asked me to, after a lapse of time, to take over this job.
So you became a member of the state staff quite
the
early.
State staff in
1936. 36.
And I stayed a member of the state staff in some state position until March 1, 1977.
More than 40 years?
Yeah.
As
well,
a member of the state staff?
What is it? When I counted up the last time, it was 43 years, 9 months, and so many days.
Well, that kind of is your county work.
Yeah.
That was state work, but you're on
got,
the,
yeah, state work. And
you were actually
work.
On the state staff.
Yeah, I wasn't at the county, on the county staff. I wasn't at the county level for about 3 years.
About 3 years. I suppose there's no member of the extension staff who has served longer on the state staff in the whole history of extension than you have.
I really don't know. I expect that's true. I know Fred Sloan had a pretty long tenure, but I just don't know how many years.
I have an interview with Fred, and but I do know that he had several years in the county,
yeah,
probably longer than you did.
I expect so.
But he became a district agent quite early.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you became a 4-H club, a state 4-H club leader for
mm-hmm.
blacks.
Yeah.
When you had distribution of responsibility.
Two different divisions or separate.
Well, now, was L.R. Harrell in it at that time?
L.R. Harrell was a state 4-H club leader at that time.
He was leader when you came in?
When I came in.
So he had something to do with...
Well, he had quite a role in this decision.
I'd like to stop right here, and just occurs to me that in all of these interviews, I haven't focused on L.R. Harrell to
mm-hmm.
any great degree. How about talking about L.R. Harrell's leadership in a capsule, in a brief way from here? He brought you into it, and
he brought me into it, and we were in constant consultation and that kind of thing in terms of how we blend the two programs, and. He made it a point to appear on all state 4-H weeks that we had, and in every other instance that we called on him in terms of his contribution. I don't know of anybody that was any more committed and dedicated to 4-H club work than L.R. Harrell. He could sing, and he made it a point to make a contribution in this area at every opportunity. He participated in terms of 4-H club members in the National 4-H Congress and made a very unique contribution. He had a tremendous number of winners. I remember the wife of one of the secretaries of agriculture was a native of North Carolina and a 4-H member, and the two of them met at the National 4-H Congress.
You're talking about Earl Butts.
Earl Butts.
And Mary Emma.
Yeah, and
she grew up.
I don't know of anybody who has put more emphasis on leadership development and the image and the participation of people in boys and girls in 4-H club work than Mr. Harrell.
And how long were you on the 4-H club staff?
I was on the 4-H club staff from 1936 until 1945.
Nine years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then in 45.
And then in 45, the former state agent black, that's John W. Mitchell, who was a state agent for Negro work a considerable length of time, moved to the field agent position in Washington. And I took over at that time as a state agent for Negro work.
So you had that, and then you were in the state agent's position for...
I was in the state agent position until about 1951, when I was named assistant director of the Extension Service.
Well, that's a very rich career in extension. You worked, when you first came to the state office, you were working with L.R. Harrell as a state 4-H club leader, but Dean Aushab was the director.
Dean Aushab was director, and no question in my mind that he was one of the more respected directors in the whole country. If I look back at all the directors we have had, now we've had some outstanding directors, but I don't know of anybody that possibly could have related as evenly and as objectively and as deliberately to the initial problems of involving blacks in the Extension Service. And for example, he used to say to Mr. Goodman, who was the assistant director, and the rest of the people he had, any time they got any appropriation from Washington in terms of the Smith-Lever Act by way of development of the Extension Service, I want you to do one thing. I want you to make sure that blacks have a representative share of these funds in the development of the program.
Now, this was in a time when integration was...
It wasn't even considered. It was a totally segregated kind of thing.
Yes.
The only sense in which it wasn't totally segregated, and as I remember, ever since Dean Schaub's administration, we made it a point in North Carolina to see that in terms of the administration of the program, the supervision of the program, the county relationships in terms of support of the program, that all of this was a part of the joint effort of the Total Extension Service and each of these directors in that following Dean Schaub made it a point to see that we were part of the Total Extension effort. In fact, I've, as far as I can remember, ever since I was state agent, almost every case that I remember in terms of the state 4-H staff, by way of problems and personnel and funding and total image in the state, ever since I can remember, I was a part of the state 4-H group in terms of its monthly meetings.
Now you say the state 4-H group, you mean the
state? I mean the staff, the administrative
staff.
The state
administrative staff.
Yeah. And this was true in terms of the supervisory staff. This didn't come at the same time that we were in the administrative group, but we came very shortly after that. They always had a monthly meeting together. It's been a coordinated effort for a long time.
In other words, what you're saying is that long before the 1954, 1964 laws were passed, that there was an open consideration so far as the staff was concerned.
Well, you take all the annual meetings that I remember during Dean Schaub time, and this was probably not true in any other state in the union. All agents, if you talk about a state meeting, they met at the same time in the same place. For example, we met on State College's campus, and we lived down here in the Black Hotel. And whites lived in the other hotel, but all the meals we had was on State College's campus, and Dean Schaub saw to it that that was what it was. Even though we may not have eaten in the same room, but they made sure that State College And this has been true. In fact, I don't know of anybody that was as unique as Dean Shaw at a time when it was almost against the law in the minds of most people to even consider anything like this.
Unheard of at that time.
Yeah.
Well, that's really quite a compliment to them as leaders. It's also, I think, a commentary on the confidence that they had and feeling that they had a quality of black people working with them. How about telling us something about the experiences that you had with some of those early meetings when you would have to go out somewhere else and get your lunch? You did in some places, didn't you?
Well, to tell you the truth, well, almost up until the Civil Rights Act.
About 1960.
Almost up until that point. We would meet on State College's campus in terms of monthly meetings and all this kind of thing. And for committee assignments and training meetings. But when it came lunchtime, we would probably go back downtown to the hotel, the black hotel, to eat or some black restaurant. And this was true up until the 1960s. And this was just almost something that had been just understood and expected, and this didn't become a real obsession on anybody's part. I remember the time that when we started talking about eating on State College's campus. Oh, I expect 3 or 4 years before they passed this decision, there were cases that a number of us ate on in the student union cafeteria and that kind of thing. I remember meeting with Director Yalt in the student union building in the cafeteria, and we had lunch down there together, and we had a conference for about 45-50 minutes.
I don't know if you were aware of this little experience, but back in the 50s, early 50s, mm-hmm. 50 or 51, when I was head of the Department of Animal Industry, I sent out an invitation to all of the grade A dairymen in the state mm-hmm. to come into a conference. And we had about 6 or 8 black dairymen, and I sent out a message that a certain fee would be charged, and that would include the lunch and the banquet.
Yeah.
And I took, as far as I know, the first mixed group that I'd ever seen in Leaser Dining Hall was there in the early 50s.
Well, I would think that this was true. You take, North Carolina was the first state that employed a technical agriculture specialist, and it was in the field of dairy.
Yes.
And that was at the time of your administration.
What's his name?
Wynn, R.L. Wynn.
Is he still living?
He's still living. He's live right over here in Greensboro.
Maybe I ought to talk with him.
This was the first area in which we began to make some progress in eliminating this total segregated pattern.
Well, speaking of when, I remember a meeting of the North Carolina Jersey Cattle Club in Charlotte
mm-hmm.
when Dr. Howard Odom was
yeah.
president of the club
mm-hmm.
and I was secretary
mm-hmm.
and I had arranged this meeting in the Charlotte Hotel
mm-hmm.
and Wynn was attending those meetings, and Dr. Odom asked me if the hotel was going to permit Wynn to have lunch with the group, and I said I didn't know. And he said, well, before we have the lunch, we're going to find out. And so I asked the hotel if he could do that, and they said no.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Odom said, you cancel the lunch,
yeah.
which I did.
Mm-hmm.
And that was related to R.L. Wynn.
Yeah. I tell you what, we probably Wynn Palter had more direct experience in terms of the initial breakdown of this complete segregated pattern in extension in a particular area that I know. In fact, I expect it's related to the fact that a year or two before that, we had brought in all of these dairy cattle for sale to farmers, and I think we ended up bringing in something like about 22 carloads of these animals from all over the southeastern state. And this is one way where you got all these 4-H Club members, we purebred or at least graded dairy animals. See?
No.
And at that time, this was the reason why we decided that, along with you, Mr. Airy, Dr. Hyde, this is where we decided that we would go into this area of bringing in a technical specialist. And this that may happen anywhere in the whole country.
Well, I hadn't realized that it was that much ahead of the rest of the country.
Well, it wasn't the one of them. In fact, it was at least 4 or 5 years before any other state added any blacks in a technical. In fact, they truth, you almost negligible until they had this supplement or this amendment to the 1972 U.S. Agricultural Appropriation Act.
It's all right, go ahead.
Where you allotted funds specifically to these black land-grant colleges.
Well, that's a very interesting comment. Well, now, how about backing up and commenting on the pattern of operation and how it changed? You said that so far as the top staff was concerned, that the long before the Civil Rights Act was passed, mm-hmm. That there was a rather harmonious relationship, mm-hmm. and that they met and considered programs jointly and
yeah.
planned together,
mm-hmm.
and all of this. But at the same time, we had a black staff in the counties and a white staff,
mm-hmm.
and they were housed at separate places.
Yeah.
How about picking up now with that pattern and leading it on into the transition?
Well, in the first place, I suppose at that point in time, when you had two separate organizations as such, this was primarily at the county level. Now, at the state level, it was always a semi-integrated, like the administrative group that we had, the district group that we had, and the specialist group.
And the training program.
And the training programs.
We integrated those long before the institution.
They were integrated long before in the 60s when this was ruled out. The training programs, any project programs or demonstration type programs, or any meetings where you involve technology and all this kind of thing, and this included the specialist staff at North Carolina State, the heads of the departments, the instructors, and everything else. In fact, the very first year that I was as county agent over in Craven County, I was working with a farmer over there on truck crops, and we got to the point that we were talking about Irish potatoes, and we got him to do a program on increased production. I ran into a problem down there in terms of the amount of water, and the really wasn't growing off the way it should, and so when the farmer called me down there and I went out and looked at it, I told him, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll call this specialist at North Carolina State and see if I can get him down here. So I picked up the telephone and called over to the horticulture department. And I don't remember the name right now or who was there, but anyway, the next day he came down and we rode out to the eastern end of Craven County, and we walked over his farm, and we decided what we would do. And they had a guy had a beautiful crop, you know. So, as a result of these kind of things, now this is as far back as 1934, 33 and 34 when this happened. Agriculture specialists, even though we didn't have any technical specialists at A&T, they serviced black agents all over North Carolina. This was a part of the plan of work. This was the part of the commitment of the director. And the thing I needed to say, in addition to what I think is the uniqueness of Dean Shaw's leadership as director, we have had, I think, the most objective, the most liberal, and the most understanding set of directors in North Carolina, in the state that I know. And I know just about every one of them at a period of time in the nation.
Well, you know all of them that North Carolina has had, and many of the others. Mm-hmm. But certainly Dave Weaver and Bob Schaffner and George Hyatt all fitted into
that. Oh, they.